Does it kiss your eyelids in the morning when you start to raise your head?
This is In This Starless City, Abandoned Vampire AU, written by Her Love Was a Joke and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated PG-13, contains the pairings Pete Wentz, Patrick Stump, Brendan Urie, Ryan Ross, and John Walker, Spencer Smith, with mentions of Andy Butcher Mrotek, Adam Siska. This story is part 10 of the Screaming Down the Starlit Sky universe. For more author's notes, information, and content warnings, please check out the introduction posts on my live journal. Pete Wentz had never been an early riser. It had never been an issue, not when there were people to watch over him, keep him safe during the long minutes after sundown, when he still hadn't opened his eyes. There were some among his enemies who were already wide awake and fully dressed when the sun was still high in the sky, so waking late could prove disastrous. While there wouldn't be much honor in killing Pete while he was sleeping, or when his reflexes were still sluggish in those initial moments of wakefulness, it would still get the job done. Revenge was revenge, no matter how it was carried out. Waking used to be uncomfortable. In those first few moments, when Pete's defenses were down and his instincts that much more difficult to ignore, the first thing he'd lock onto was the three strong, steady heartbeats that all but surrounded him. One was always sweeter, more potent, beating in time with the ache in his teeth. Pete kept that bit of information to himself. That wasn't something he had to torture himself with anymore. Waking wasn't uncomfortable now, and while it was still difficult, at least his groggy mind didn't taunt him with images of limbs struggling against his hands, pain gasps, and thick, heady mouthfuls of blood. No. All of that had been quickly replaced with dead eyes, rotting corpses, and revenge fantasies almost terrifying in their detail. Pete blinked twice and rolled his shoulders back, popping the joints. As he lay there on the floor of a hastily converted walk-in closet, he took a moment to stretch out his senses, taking stock of his surroundings. There was a hooker in the back alley, negotiating her price. A car with a broken muffler made its way down the street, music cranked loudly to block out the rumble. The stray dog that had followed him home the night before was snuffling in his sleep, somewhere near the front door of the horrible little apartment Pete had managed to secure in the hours before daylight. It felt strange to be waking alone. Wrong, after so many evenings spent being equally horrified and comforted by the steady beating of human hearts, the inundation of fresh sweat and deep bruises. Pete always knew when they'd spent the day training, trying new maneuvers or working with new weapons. They were too good to let it show in their movements, too adept at hiding exhaustion and hurt. But not even the sharp smell of male sweat was enough to mask the underlying sweetness of a new bruise, blood trapped just below the surface of so much soft, vulnerable skin. Pete shook his head and slowly sat up. That was gone now. There was no sense in playing it over and over every time he opened his eyes. He wondered how long it would be before he finally found another way to torture himself. He hadn't seen Joe and Andy in 3 days. He hadn't seen Patrick in 6. Patrick. Pete got to his feet and did his best to halt his current train of thought. The last thing he needed was to lose another full night to breaking things and indulging in his anger. The body wouldn't find itself. The last thing Pete wanted was for Patrick to be out there, alone, longer than he had to be. The The last 6 days saw routines give way to compulsions. He would rise, choke back his blend, and zip his red hoodie halfway up his chest. Always the red one with the black logo. A uniform of his very own, one he'd stick with until he saw the situation to its end. He was single-minded about his task, and since time wouldn't continue to march on for Patrick, it only felt right that Pete would similarly stay the same. Like always, Pete was barely finished swallowing his last mouthful of the blend before he was making his way outside, itching to feel the slick asphalt under his shoes, to feel the light rain soaking into his sweater. There was a tension in his shoulders, a wariness to his gaze as he took in every shadow, every tiny movement in his peripheral vision. He caught sight of his reflection in a darkened shop window, partially boarded over, and barely gave the terrifying look a second thought. Patrick would have pulled him aside, would have emphasized the importance of blending in, passing for human. He would have gripped Pete's arm tightly, given him a significant look. It would have worked, too. Pete would have taken care to mask his anger, all because Patrick had been the one to ask. But Patrick wasn't around, and there was no one left to fool. His secret was out, courtesy of Gerard fucking Way, and the game he didn't even care enough about to stay and watch. Pete could hide a lot of things, but dandy interest, out-of-town dandy interest, wasn't one of them. Gabriel's envoys hadn't bothered to keep a low profile, and it hadn't taken long for Briar's hobby to become noticeable. But then, that was probably the point. Deimos wasn't subtle. He didn't care to be. With a low growl, Pete shoved his hands into the pockets of his hoodie, balling them into tight fists. The joints in his fingers cracked loudly, but he ignored the ache and continued down the street. He knew the route by heart. How could he not, after he'd walked it 3 times a night for the last 6 nights? The dump sites were familiar places, long before Pete took up his nightly rounds. They used to be his hunting grounds. If he couldn't catch the vampires before they'd killed someone, he could at least catch them afterwards. Most of them didn't bother to move their dead, but vampires were a lot like humans. Some of them just enjoyed the kill. Some of them got off on the routine. Pete could understand that. There were fresh bodies in the vacant lot behind the boarded-up bowling alley. He knew there was no need to move closer, to waste his time. But Pete found himself going to them anyway. Both were female, and as Pete stood there, looking down at them, he took in their similar features and strong resemblance. A family would be missing 2 daughters in the morning. There was a time when he would have cared about that, gotten angry and wanted to punish someone. As it was, all he did was turn away. They weren't what he was looking for, and he didn't have it in him to do more than shake his head. The Fifth Street sewers were a favorite spot used to dispose of punk victims. Pete didn't think their preference for out-of-sight disposals had anything to do with wanting to keep their streets neat and tidy. Small minds amused easily, and malicious ones enjoyed prolonging grief. There was no body, but there was a hat, barely visible in the dark, half buried by filth and dirt. Pete had missed the police cleanup. A shoddy one at that if they'd left personal effects behind. Still, he could use that to his advantage. He had enough stops to make without adding the city morgue to the list. He found himself leaning closer to the open manhole, on his knees in a puddle of water, trying to get a better look. After a moment, he decided the hat was the wrong color, dark blue instead of black. It wasn't Patrick's, but Pete didn't bother to sigh in relief. He knew better than to hold false hope. With a dark look, He shoved the manhole cover back in place and continued on his way. He barely felt the rub of dirty wet denim against his skin. The Derringer Bridge was disgusting on the best of days, but lately there had been reports of bodies dumped down near the water. Pete never found any by the time his rounds took him that far across town, but that only meant they'd already been picked up. It was Hood territory. Or had been, when there'd been more than a handful of Hoods left. There was only so much three vampires could do when it came to fighting off the other gangs. Pete didn't have much of an opinion on what the dandies had done to the Hoods, though he did wish he knew the specifics of it. Knowing what exactly had set them off, what had brought the woman with the red lips and ancient eyes to town, would be useful information. With one of the gangs all but dead, the dandies now had more time on their hands. Slights would be easier to avenge. It would be nice to know if Pete stood any chance of protecting Andy or Joe, now that he wasn't around to watch their backs. Pete turned away from the bridge, heading for the last place on his mental checklist. He walked quickly, with purpose, his head bowed against the rain. His hood had long ago slipped down, but Pete paid it little attention. The state of his hair was hardly a priority. His hands were still in his pockets, though they'd long ago relaxed from the tight fists. The fingers of his left hand were playing across smooth leather and cold metal. Blunt nails scribbling across the shallow engravings on a flat steel disc. He'd meant to return it, had kept telling himself he'd do it later. Now there was no later, and all he had left to hold was a bunch of ticking cogs impeccably fitted together. A watch with another man's name written across the back. Stories had it that the Chinese restaurant was owned by a dandy back when he'd still been alive. Pete didn't know if that was true, but he did know that vampires from all three gangs enjoyed using the alley behind it. The current owners barely batted an eye when a body turned up sometime in the night. Why would they, when they paid the dandy gang for the privilege of staying open in such a volatile neighborhood? The restaurant had been closed for some time when Pete got there. He moved quickly, quietly, making his way around the side of the building to the alley where the dumpster was. The light from the street lamp didn't make it this far into the alley, and the naked bulb above the restaurant's back door was broken, shards of glass crunching under the soles of Pete's sneakers. He didn't see anything at first, didn't notice anything out of the ordinary, until he approached the dumpster. As he got closer, he caught sight of a hand sticking out from the other side, fingers curled loosely upward. Pete stopped in his tracks, staring at the pale skin, at the fingers he'd know anywhere. His eyes fell closed, and for a moment he could almost feel those fingers bunching in the back of his sweater, holding him back, holding him close. Funny how everything had been working toward this. And now that it was over, he just didn't know what to do first. Joe's breath came out in a long hiss as he straightened his arm, working the joint of his elbow back and forth. His arm hurt like hell, the bone obviously still broken. But the cast was nothing more than a giant flashing sign advertising him as the weakest member of the group. He'd just have to make do without it, take care not to jostle it too much, and work on not holding it oddly against his body. He'd dealt with worse injuries, blood loss and stitches, things that nearly required surgery to fix. A broken arm was small in comparison. He stood in front of the bathroom mirror and slowly began pulling off his filthy clothes. His torso was covered with bruises, most of them old and nearly forgotten, but some of them new and screaming for attention. There was a series of them, in the distinct shape of boot prints, running across his chest. It hurt to breathe, but it didn't feel like any of his ribs were broken. Joe supposed he should be thankful for small miracles. His hand skimmed down his stomach, fingers framing a particularly livid bruise. He didn't remember the others, but he remembered this one. For the most part, the punks who jumped him were just happy to have found some sport. They hadn't been particularly angry or invested in what they were doing. Not until the dandy had showed up. That kick to his stomach had been more vicious than the others, was obviously meant to send a message. The punk had been brave, showing off for a young dandy fledgling, all the while hoping to be far away when the story reached Briar. He wasn't suicidal, only in the mood to bait the visiting envoy before he left. Everyone knew what would happen to someone who damaged dandy property. Joe shuddered at the thought, but there was no sense in sugarcoating it. As far as the vampires were concerned, that's what he was. As far as the other hunters were concerned, that's what he was. As far as Pete was concerned? No, Pete was better than that, even if he did have his issues. Joe cut off that train of thought fairly quickly, knowing that it wasn't fair. He wondered how he'd have reacted if the roles were reversed, if Joe was the one stuck with the ever-present reminder of his inability to keep his friends, his family, safe. Pete never said a word about what Gerard did, but Joe had caught him looking often enough, had seen the sad, troubled expression in his eyes, to know that the thoughts were rarely far from his mind. With a sigh, Joe slowly pulled a clean shirt over his head, taking care with his injured arm. He was exhausted already, and he'd only been awake a little over 5 hours. Still, it had been a busy 5 hours. He and Andy had been on the streets, making their rounds, trying to find any small scrap of information that might lead them to whoever had grabbed Patrick. Once upon a time, someone might have actually been willing to help them. While Pete had stuck to the fringes of the small network, and Joe and Andy sometimes felt kind of invisible, Patrick had been well-liked. And then he'd been marked, and Pete had been outed. 3 years of goodwill disappeared in an instant, and the small network they'd managed to put together was in shambles. Joe heard that Marissa had died that evening. There was a time when they'd have kept an eye on her, knowing that she was hardly ready to be out on her own, especially not after her brother had been killed in the fight against the envoy, Felix. Joe might have even felt grief at her death, before things had gone so terribly wrong. Any chance of that happening now was gone. Marissa had been the first to turn her back on them, and while Joe would never wish her end on anyone, he sure as hell wasn't going to cry over it. She didn't deserve that from him. "You look like shit." Joe heard Andy come in almost 6 minutes ago, though he'd been moving quietly, the soles of his shoes barely making a sound against the worn linoleum tile of the safe house they'd managed to set up in the last few days. Joe wasn't surprised that it had taken him so long to say something. Andy wasn't exactly a man of many words lately, not that Joe blamed him. He might not have actually had anything to feel guilty about, but telling a man that and having him believe it were two very different things. They'd argued before, even coming close to exchanging punches, but this was different somehow. Not because Patrick was calling Pete on his bullshit. And it was bullshit, Joe had no trouble admitting that, though maybe he wouldn't go so far as to shout it in Pete's face. But because Patrick was finally angry enough, hurt enough, to put his hands on Pete and shove. That might have been a common sight 3 years ago, but not since Pete had interned. No, Patrick had been a lot more careful of his actions since then. Pete could keep everything close to the vest if he wanted to, but they'd all been around enough vampires to know what they were capable of and how easy it was to lose control. "Are you planning to ignore that, too?" Patrick demanded, moving closer, intending to shove Pete again. "Maybe I should get Gerard down here. He seemed pretty chatty in that video he sent us." It was clearly the wrong thing to say, even if it got to the heart of the matter. Something dark twisted in Pete's eyes, and the vampire took a step toward Patrick, his face a cold, unyielding mask. Joe couldn't help but notice the way his gaze was directed just over Patrick's eyes, or sometimes somewhere to his left. "They know, Pete," Patrick continued. "Everyone knows, and you're never around anymore. What, do you think that maybe no one will suspect you? Well, newsflash, Pete, they already do. I've heard them." At that point, they'd all heard the gossip. Though, even if they hadn't, Joe was pretty sure they would have figured it out on their own. After all, there was only so many times a man's supposed allies could look the other way while he almost got his throat ripped out before he started to wonder about it. "Why the fuck aren't you looking at me?" Patrick demanded. His eyes were angry, but his voice was quieter, as though this particular question wasn't meant to be part of the scene he knew he was making. "Is it because he got a taste? It is, isn't it? Are you angry that he beat you to it?" That was apparently the breaking point, because Pete's eyes snapped back to Patrick's, and the look on his face was terrifying. Joe watched with trepidation, unsure if he should intervene or not. Andy didn't have any such problems. "Patrick, go. Take a walk." Andy grabbed Patrick, and none too gently shoved him in the opposite direction from Pete, just as the vampire took another step toward Patrick. Patrick looked like he was going to argue, but Andy just pointed down the street. "Before you say something else you're going to regret, go." Patrick stood there for another minute, just to be contrary. But in the end, he turned and shoved his hands in the pockets of his hoodie. Shoulders drawn up, he walked away, not bothering to look back. No one thought anything of it when his walk ended up being longer than just a few minutes. More than just around the block. Patrick's temper was legendary, and the more time he took to calm it, the more grateful everyone else would be. But when Pete was the first one back, at about an hour to sunrise, obviously ready to make amends, the first worries began to take hold. When the sun rose and he wasn't home at all, the panic started to set in. Desperation came right around sunset, when Pete woke to find Andy and Joe wearing holes in the floor as they paced. Pete was always good at keeping his emotions to himself, even when he'd been alive. But in that moment, they'd seen just how afraid he'd been. They'd gone to the Dandies, not expecting much, but were disappointed all the same. The gang was in chaos, and while they'd all heard the stories of missing fledglings and loved ones. No one had actually believed them until that moment. As Joe stood there, taking in the disarray as dandies and humans alike stood on the sidewalk and watched the hotel, their interim safe house, burn. He had no choice but to admit that their best bet, the one they'd pinned all their hopes on, was gone. Andy had nothing to feel guilty for, but that hadn't stopped him from wondering if maybe he should have just let Pete and Patrick fight it out, instead of sending Patrick off on his own. He'd only brought it up once, but Joe knew better than to think that one terse, "It's not your fucking fault, Andy," had been enough to change his mind. "You should check the city limits again," was all that Andy said. Joe sighed and nodded, scratching at his scalp and cracking his neck.
Yeah,
he said. They hadn't been there in at least 3 days. He let Andy lead the way to the door of the tiny apartment they were currently staying in. They'd have to leave soon, couldn't risk being caught squatting, but at least it was a roof over their heads and a place to sleep for a few hours. It was only a matter of time, though, before the building was sold. A sign had gone up in the window of the now-empty storefront downstairs. At first, Joe worried about Patrick not being able to find his way back to them. As the days wore on, he began to worry about what would happen if he did. Not finding a body could mean more than one thing in their line of work. The city limits were a complete bust, with nothing to be seen but the tire tracks they'd left there days earlier, the impressions barely recognizable in dirt soaked by the recent rain. Joe kicked at the ground as he leaned against the trunk of the car, doing his best to politely ignore Andy's own attempt to get at his frustrations. "Let's go," Joe said, refusing to give in to the urge to kick again, to send a spray of dirty water flying through the air. He was angry, but there were better outlets for that. If nothing else, he could at least hit up one of the clubs, shadow a vampire as he or she chose their victim for the night. It would be satisfying to fight them, to feel their bones break and their flesh give. He thought momentarily of the vampires who might be left behind afterward, who might grieve in their own twisted way, and knew it would feel like a small, tiny piece of revenge, as though he was taking from them like they'd taken from him. The hour-long drive back to the safe house was spent in silence, like most of their time together lately had been. Joe stared out the passenger side window, allowing the surroundings to blur past without really focusing on anything, until Andy turned the car down their street. Then he watched the shadows sharply, looking for anything out of place. He found it before they ever got out of the car. One of the ripped, dusty curtains in the apartment's only window was slightly open. Joe knew for a fact that neither he nor Andy had ever touched it. They moved slowly, cautiously up the staircase. Joe's fingers closed over the knife he kept in a sheath at the small of his back. In his peripheral vision, he could see Andy mirroring the action, reaching for his own weapon. After a moment of silent communication, which was little more than a few looks and an arched eyebrow, they started the countdown to opening the door. 3, 2, 1. Joe reached forward and flung the door open, anticipating an attack by either vampires or hunters. Joe wasn't sure which group would be more dangerous, but he knew that he'd show them both the same amount of mercy. He was moving before he could think about it, his body knowing exactly what to do, where to stand, how to move with Andy at his back to make best use of their respective skills. He didn't pay his injured arm any attention, didn't even have to remind himself to hold it naturally, to disguise the weakness. The fight would be a short one. With his mood, Joe had no intention of drawing it out or making it last. His knife came up and his body turned automatically toward the shape across the room, every instinct he had screaming about the predator lying in wait. Joe blinked, and in that instant, everything came clearly into focus. He stopped in his tracks and stared with wide eyes. Pete was standing against the wall, looking out the window as though his friends hadn't just planned to kill him. He turned then, but he didn't look at either Joe or Andy. No, his eyes were drawn to the beat-up old sofa in the corner, the only piece of furniture that had been left behind by previous owners. Patrick was lying on his side, the light from the street lamp outside filtering through the dirt and grime on the windowpane, illuminating his pale, ashen skin. He made a quiet, distressed sound. Joe's legs went out from under him, but he didn't even feel his knees hit the floor. The vampire smiled, flashing his fangs, and his expression was predatory and terrifying. He took a step forward, just one measured little step, but the boy scrambled backward anyway. The movements left him feeling awkward and slow, nothing at all like the fluidity and grace of the monster in front of him. "Stop," Patrick said, raising one hand to ward off the vampire, as though that might actually work. "It's time to end this," Pete said. 6 years is enough foreplay, don't you think?" The boy didn't even have time to shake his head, to turn and run, or even cry out. The vampire was on him in an instant, his fingers biting into Patrick's arms, pinning him to the wall. His head was twisted to the side, and sharp teeth sliced cleanly through his throat. All Patrick could do was gurgle. The cry stuck in his throat, the sound scraping along his vocal cords as Patrick tried to hold it in, not wanting to draw attention to himself. That was the first rule he'd learned as a hunter, and even now, in this hopeless situation, he held to it. There was no sense in giving in to the pain, no point in letting the vampire enjoy it more than he already was. If Patrick could keep this little piece of himself, even when his very life was draining away by the mouthful, then he'd at least die happy. "Patrick?" A voice was calling him, insistently cutting through the haze of his thoughts, the pain in his head. Funny how he couldn't feel the tear in his throat, only the pounding in his temples. Maybe that's what dying was. A jumbled mess of sensation that made no sense. "Patrick, open your eyes." "You'd like that," Patrick wanted to say. And he would. "Pete, the vampire," Patrick corrected. It wasn't smart to personalize him. "Would enjoy watching the light drain out of his eyes." "Patrick!" No, wait. The voice was wrong. It wasn't the vampire, it was... With effort, Patrick forced his eyes to open. Pain spiked through his head when the light from the street lamp hit his face, but he refused to look away, even when his vision began to swim. It was a ghost. "You're dead," Patrick whispered. Joe just looked at him, mouth opening and closing like a fish. "You're dead!" He pushed himself into a sitting position, his limbs feeling heavy and uncoordinated, as though they'd been unused for several days. But no, that couldn't be it. It had been mere minutes since he'd been crouched near the window, since Pete, the vampire, had caught him. Why wouldn't his arms do what he wanted them to do? "Patrick, I'm right here," Joe exclaimed, moving closer, arms outstretched as though he thought Patrick would actually allow him to get within touching distance. Were ghosts real? Patrick had never come across anything in his research, but he'd never specifically looked into it. He flailed a little before making a fist, wondering if he could actually punch a ghost, or if his hand would go straight through like in the movies. "Calm down." The new voice made Patrick's head whip around, and the sight he was greeted with made his hands scrabble across the lumpy cushions of the couch, fingers sliding between and nails clawing at the threadbare fabric covering the broken springs. He needed a weapon, and while a twisted piece of metal wouldn't kill the monster moving in next to him, it could at least buy him a few precious seconds to get away. He scraped his palm, jerking the spring free from the sofa, but could barely feel the welt. He tightened his fingers around the smooth metal as he wielded the broken spring, jamming it into the flesh of Andy's chest, twisting it as much as possible. Andy screamed as his skin tore, hands going for Patrick's wrist, but Patrick was already on his feet, sprinting away from the sofa. Patrick knew he shouldn't stop, shouldn't look back, but he couldn't help it. Morbid curiosity made him take stock of the injuries he's inflicted. He smiled as he watched Andy pull the spring out of his chest with shaking hands. The front of his shirt was red, plastered to his skin. What the fuck are you doing? What's wrong with you? The voices came from opposite sides of the room, and Patrick didn't know where to focus his attention. With Pete, even thinking the name made Patrick want to spit. Or with Andy, who might have been young but was hardly harmless. Especially since he was currently bleeding everywhere. Against his better judgment, Patrick found himself turning toward the window, where Pete was currently pressed up against the drapes, one hand clamped firmly over his nose and mouth. His eyes were a little wild, no doubt from the smell of so much blood. Huh. Patrick had never pegged him for that kind of perversion. "You're getting off on this," Patrick said. "It's dead blood and you're fucking hard for it." He didn't take his eyes from Pete's face to check, though he strongly suspected that was the case. It was hard enough to stop thoughts of his parents from rising to the surface whenever he looked at their murderer. The last thing he needed was yet another distraction. Somewhere to his left, Andy moaned and swayed on his feet. He was certainly doing a good impression of a human. It didn't make a lot of sense, though. Why hadn't he just killed Patrick already? And for that matter, why hadn't Pete? His eyes were dark, frenzied, but he was holding himself in check. It couldn't have been easy, not when Pete was obviously entranced by the blood pouring down Andy's chest. He had motivation then, but what? "No one is dead," Joe exclaimed, breaking through Patrick's thoughts, pushing his way into Patrick's line of sight. "You aren't making any sense. What the hell happened to you?" What the hell happened? Patrick repeated the words to himself and let his jumbled thoughts sort themselves out. "Stop talking," he said. This close up, he could see the faint shadow of a bruise at the edge of Joe's head, and the awkward way he was holding his arm out from his body. He was injured. Would a ghost have injuries? That brought him back to the bigger question. Did ghosts even exist, given everything he knew, all the things he'd come across in his research, and the things he hadn't, for that matter? Was he willing to keep believing in something he had no evidence for? His thoughts continued to swirl as his mind worked on putting the pieces together, jamming at them until they fit. "Two vampires and a ghost," Patrick said softly. "But ghosts aren't real." "Vampire?" Andy said through clenched teeth. He'd taken off his shirt and used it to staunch the flow of blood. "I'm not a fucking vampire, Patrick." Patrick wasn't about to fall for that. "I always wondered what your talent was," he said, continuing as though Andy hadn't spoken. "You've been pretty good at keeping it from the humans." The vampire was on him in an instant, his fingers biting into Patrick's arms, pinning him to the wall. His head was twisted to the side and sharp teeth sliced cleanly through his throat. All Patrick could do was gurgle. "Illusionist," Patrick said, a little self-deprecating smile momentarily appearing on his face before it was gone, replaced with anger at having been so easily tricked. "You're spinning pretty pictures inside my head while one of you is draining me right now, aren't you?" Patrick flicked a glance back over at Pete, who was still huddled against the wall, hand over his face. "It's probably Pete. He's been obsessed with me from the beginning. He also doesn't like to share his food, so no matter how much of a pain in your ass I've been, he'd just make you watch." "Patrick," Andy began. "This is disappointing, though," Patrick interrupted, shaking his head in mock sadness. You almost had me. The thing is, your illusions will only work if they're believable. Joe's been dead 5 years now. I'm the one who buried him. He fought the urge to look at his hands, to rub them against his jeans. There was no blood there, Patrick told himself. No matter how much it felt like, he could still feel it, sticky and cooling against his skin. Sometimes, when his hands started to ache, he could swear he'd been digging again, the ground so hard that each shovelful of dirt was a struggle. "I'm not dead!" Joe exclaimed again. "Patrick, I promise you, I'm not dead, and Andy isn't a vampire. Look at him! If he was a vampire, he'd be all over your fucking hand right now." Patrick looked down at his hand and saw that he'd clenched it into a fist. The motion opened the deeper sections of the scrape on his palm, making it bleed. A thick bead of blood was slowly sliding down from between two of his fingers. Patrick looked from his hand over to Andy, who was standing there, calm as can be, and then over to Pete, whose body was vibrating with tension as he forced himself to keep perfectly still. He was very close to frenzying, Patrick knew. But why Pete and not Andy? He looked human, just the way he'd been the last time Patrick had seen him alive. No, this was part of the trick, meant to draw him in. Unless... Pete Wentz was well known among the hunters, both for his cruelty and his talent. Patrick imagined that he was well known among his own kind for those same reasons. It wasn't every day that someone came across a vampire who could mimic the powers of others. It had a downside, of course. It took considerable time to master the new skills, and Pete's power was only temporary. Which meant he needed practice. Practice, and a participant who would stay still long enough for Pete to absorb what he needed, as often as he needed it. This whole situation had amateur written all over it. "You're not even here," Patrick said after a moment. "This fuck-up is all his doing." Patrick pointed at Pete, who still hadn't moved, hadn't tried to even defend himself. Yes, that had to be it, Patrick thought. This scenario fits so much better. It also explained the strange, symbiotic relationship that Pete and Andy had fallen into after Andy had been turned. Pete's powers were terrifying, but they had their limitations. What better way to augment them than to join with someone and learn all you could about their gift, too? "Patrick, listen to yourself!" Andy exclaimed, pulling Patrick's attention away from his thoughts. "Just listen! I don't know what happened while you were gone, but this is crazy. It's us. I'm not a vampire, and Joe isn't dead. Pete isn't fucking with your head right now, either." "That's what you want me to believe," Patrick yelled. "None of this is real." He gestured wildly about the room, before slamming his injured hand into the wall to illustrate his point. Pain jarred up his arm to the elbow, and he could barely contain his gasp. "Okay. That certainly felt real. Only there's no way he should have felt that. Unless maybe he'd cut his hand trying to get away before he'd be pulled into the illusion. That might do it." If that was the case, there was an easy way to tell. An illusionist could make you see things, but they couldn't make things happen. It was just a picture. A terrifying one, but a picture all the same. Either something was there to cause you pain, or it wasn't. He ran his fingers over the unblemished skin, but where he should have at least felt the raised tissue of the scar, he felt nothing of the sort. The mark wasn't there. Patrick stared at his wrist in disbelief. He'd carved that mark himself, had screwed up his courage for days before finally taking the knife to his flesh. He'd been terrified the entire time, worried about cutting too deeply, maybe nicking a vein, but it had been necessary in the end to fool any vampires who might have caught him. Patrick flexed his hand back and forth, watching as the smooth, unblemished skin was pulled taut. Nothing there. There was a hollow, sickening feeling in Patrick's stomach, and for a moment he thought he was going to puke. The world seemed to spin, and Patrick found himself bent almost in half, one hand pressed against his stomach, the other against his head. "Patrick?" Andy asked softly. From Patrick's vantage point, he could see Andy's shoes shuffling forward. Patrick jumped backward, straightening up and holding a hand out to keep Andy right where he was. "Don't come near me," he said. Andy nodded slowly, as though Patrick were a terrified animal ready to bolt. Patrick supposed that was true. Joe wasn't dead. But he was. Patrick had been there. He'd buried him near that stupid tree where they'd first met. Andy wasn't a vampire. But he was. Patrick had seen him be taken. He'd hidden from him often enough, knowing he couldn't possibly take him on his own. Pete was still a fucking vampire, but he was acting strangely. He hadn't even said a word since Patrick woke up, and the Pete Wentz that Patrick knew had never learned to hold his tongue. He was arrogant, loved to talk about himself, loved to show off. Yet he had stayed pressed against the window, watching with wide eyes. Patrick had a head full of memories, of facts and events that just didn't match up with what he was seeing. It didn't make any sense. "Move away from the window," he ordered, looking over at Pete. "No," Pete said, shaking his head. "You're going to jump out." Even the tone of voice wasn't right. He seemed concerned. Not concerned that his dinner was about to escape, but concerned that things had gone so very wrong and were only about to get worse. Somehow that angered Patrick more than being thought of as a hamburger and a side of fries. "When I leave, I plan to walk out the fucking door, not jump from the goddamn window. Now move," he snapped. "Pete, just do it," Joe said. Pete looked like he was going to argue again, but just shook his head and took a few steps back, stopping when he was against the adjoining wall. Patrick waited a moment to be sure he'd stay there, before slowly making his way to the window and opening the curtains. Dust motes flew through the air as his fingers clenched around the threadbare fabric, but Patrick barely noticed it. He was too busy staring at the street below, his expression one of disbelief as he watched a mother and child walk down the sidewalk, a young man on his bicycle, an elderly woman leaving a convenience store. Where was the fear? Why weren't these people hiding? How could the convenience store still be in business? Patrick had seen the ruin of the human race. He'd lived it. The vampires had won. But they hadn't. Patrick made a sound of disbelief and pressed his hands to the other side of his head. So many jumbled thoughts, and a headache that just wouldn't stop. Nothing matched up, and he was so confused that he wanted to just rock back and forth for a while. "Patrick?" Pete asked. "Don't talk to me!" Patrick yelled. "Hey, Patrick, it's okay," Joe said, no doubt trying for a soothing tone of voice and failing miserably. "Stop it," Patrick said. "This isn't right. It's not right." "Whatever's wrong, Patrick, we can fix it," Andy said. "No, you can't. You're what's wrong. You and them and everyone." Patrick's fingers tightened in his hair and he pulled a little.
You're what's wrong. You and them and everyone.
The words echoed inside Patrick's mind, and all of a sudden, it all made sense.
Maybe it just hadn't happened yet. Maybe he'd been given a chance to fix things, to keep it from coming to be. Maybe he was the only one who could do it.
The thought calmed him, stopped his freak out so quickly that it was like a switch had been thrown inside of him. He dropped his hands and took one more look out the window, at the world he remembered from so long ago. He knew what he had to do. He stood quietly, knowing that it wouldn't be long until one of them came closer, intent on comforting their friend. Patrick wasn't disappointed. It was only a few minutes before Joe started edging forward. He moved so slowly, wanting to give Patrick warning and an opportunity to stop him if he was uncomfortable. Patrick just kept his head down, wanting to smile at how easy it all was. It was nothing at all to take the knife. He barely had to twist Joe's broken arm to turn him around and get at the sheath at the small of Joe's back. His fingers crawled around the blade and pulled it loose, the weight of the knife satisfying in his hand. How long had it been since he'd held one? Patrick wasn't sure. Couldn't be sure of anything with his head such a mess. But it felt like far too long, so he savored it as best he could. He thought he could hear Andy say something, knew he could hear Joe groaning on the ground, but Patrick paid them no attention. His target was still standing on the other side of the room, staring at him almost passively. That made Patrick angry. He was halfway to Pete when he was tackled from behind. He hit the ground hard, turning the knife away from himself at the last moment, just barely avoiding stabbing himself in the chest. He wouldn't let go, though, not even when someone stamped on his hand.
Patrick, no!
Andy screamed. He was lying on Patrick's back, trying to hold him down and stop him from wiggling away. That meant it had to be Joe's foot crushing Patrick's wrist in an effort to make him let go of his weapon. Pete was still staring at him, almost sadly.
I have to do it,
Patrick yelled, reaching uncomfortably back to elbow Andy in an effort to get away.
You'll thank me. I'm not going to fucking thank you for killing Pete,
Joe snapped, as he finally got the knife away from Patrick. He kicked across the room, and Patrick snarled, still fighting to free himself.
It might not have happened yet, but that doesn't mean it won't,
Patrick insisted.
It's going to happen. I have to stop it.
You're not a seer, Patrick, Pete said softly, as though he knew he didn't have to raise his voice to be heard over the commotion. You aren't Schechter.
I don't know a fucking Schechter,
Patrick snarled. He hit out at Joe with his injured wrist and was barely able to suppress a gasp of pain.
Seriously, who the hell was Schechter?
Judging by the way Joe and Andy both went still, Patrick figured the name was supposed to have meant something. He tried to use that to his advantage.
You're not Ryan Ross, either, Pete added.
Who?
Patrick began, but his voice trailed away. Ryan. Ryan Ross. That name. Patrick searched through his jumbled memories, trying to figure out where he'd heard that name before. Every time he thought he had it, it was like he'd run up against a dead end. The memory he needed no longer there where he could find it. After a moment, the ache in his head flared again, distracting Patrick from his train of thought. He'd managed to convince himself that it wasn't important. It was nothing more than another of Pete's tricks, and he fought harder to get out from under Andy and Joe's combined weight.
Joe, get the bag you guys stole from the clinic, Pete said.
He pushed away from the wall and came back toward them,
grabbing Patrick's uninjured wrist and twisting it behind his back to immobilize the arm.
"Pete," Joe said wearily.
Pete just shoved him aside and took his place, holding Patrick down with enough strength that he was completely unable to move his upper body. Andy moved to secure Patrick's legs, so the only thing Patrick could do was yell.
"Let me go! I have to do this! You should be helping me!"
"Do it, Joe,"
Pete snapped. Patrick didn't know what Joe saw in the vampire's expression, but he hurried away to do as he'd been told. Joe wasn't gone long. He came back with a small zippered bag. It dangled by one strap as he dug through it, eventually pulling out a small vial and a syringe. Patrick's eyes went wide, and his struggles doubled, trying to get away from whatever they were planning to do to him.
"This isn't right,"
Andy said, his weight shifting a little against Patrick's legs, almost as though he wanted to get up.
"Do you have a better idea?"
Pete asked.
"He's going to fucking hurt himself, or one of us. You want that?"
Andy didn't answer. Patrick wondered what Joe thought of Pete's plan, but then he felt the prick of a needle in his arm and the burn of whatever had been injected.
"It won't hurt you,"
Joe said, as though that was supposed to make Patrick feel better. "It'll just knock you out."
"Fuck you,"
Patrick snarled, but his lips and tongues didn't want to cooperate, and his words were almost slurred. He tried to struggle again, but his entire body was feeling heavy and uncoordinated. The room was getting dark. Within a minute, he was dead to the world. The sedatives had been taken from a clinic that specialized in day surgeries. There was usually a security guard on duty, but he was so focused on keeping the homeless and the junkies away from the drug room that Andy and Joe had been able to walk right past him. All they'd had to do was convince some unwashed, underfed man to create a scene in the front lobby. His price had been incredibly cheap. A sandwich from the cafe down the street, near the alley in which he lived. Pete bought him, too. As he sat there, once again staring at the unconscious slump of Patrick's body, Pete couldn't help but rub his hands over his eyes, pressing hard enough that red spots danced across his eyelids. Christ, they spent 6 days searching only for this to be the outcome. Pete sighed and dropped his hands, his eyes focusing on the slow movements as Patrick breathed in and out. Pete hadn't expected to ever see that again. Now there was a hollow kind of feeling in the pit of his stomach, and he had no one to blame but himself. He should have kept a cool head when he realized Patrick was still alive in that alley. Allowing himself to be happy, to hope that the worst was behind them, had been a very bad idea. "What the fuck was that?" Andy demanded, his voice high and more than a little disbelieving.
"What the fuck?"
Pete's eyes snapped away from the pulse point in Patrick's neck, focusing instead on Andy's face. He could tell from the way Andy fell silent, the way he fidgeted uncomfortably, that the expression on his face was anything but friendly.
"If I knew what had happened, don't you think I'd have told you?"
Pete asked, voice quiet, dangerous.
"That's not what he meant,"
Joe interjected.
"Tell him, Andy."
"I know what he meant,"
Pete said.
"And no, I have no fucking clue what happened to Patrick."
"Finding him alive wasn't an accident, then," Andy said. He reached out and was straightening the hem of Patrick's shirt before he caught himself and drew his hand away. There was a strange look on his face, part contemplation, part confusion. It wasn't hard for Pete to guess what Andy was thinking about. In the delusions, Joe had been dead, but Andy was a vampire. Pete had picked up on Andy's disgust, and while he didn't exactly blame him, he couldn't help but wonder whether Andy made that particular face when he thought of Pete.
No,
Pete said, shaking himself from his train of thought.
You don't go to this much trouble to scramble someone's brains and then let them die behind a dumpster. Someone was watching me. They knew when I'd be there.
They couldn't let anyone else find him, Joe said.
That would ruin the fun, Pete agreed. Can't have that,
Andy muttered.
It can't just be that, Joe insisted. Those planted memories were seriously detailed. I'm dead, Andy's a vampire, Pete... fucking Pete.
They made sure he was alone, Pete said softly, his eyes once again trained on Patrick. His hat was missing. He'd hate that. Pete felt the strongest urge to get up and find him something to cover his thin reddish hair.
And the rest?
Andy asked.
The bit about us losing?
Either they're assholes who wanted to break him, or they're lazy fuckers and left gaps. Pete shrugged. Patrick could have filled them in himself, I don't know.
What the hell are we going to do?
Joe voiced the question that they'd all been thinking. Pete felt a wash of irritation to hear the words spoken out loud. Saying them meant having to acknowledge the fact that they really had no idea how the hell they were supposed to fix it. Unless... Pete went still as his mind puzzled it out, changing the plan until it resembled something that might actually be feasible. It was still a stretch, still a risk. But the alternative was doing nothing, and Pete wouldn't, just sit around and watch Patrick hurt himself or someone else. Especially not when it was obviously Pete's damn fault.
I'm going out,
Pete said, getting to his feet in the blink of an eye and shoving his fists in the pockets of his hoodie.
Where?
Andy demanded. He got to his feet slowly, still a little woozy from the blood loss. He'd long ago lost the t-shirt bandage, and it wasn't until he swayed on his feet that he realized he was still covered in blood. His eyes went wide, and he conspicuously took a step backward, away from Pete. Pete didn't know whether he should be grateful or insulted. He settled on a combination of the two, mixed with a little anger. At himself, for his reaction. At Andy, for forgetting. At whoever had hurt Patrick, for obvious reasons.
I'll tell you when I get back, Pete said brusquely. If it works.
In his head, he could hear Patrick's voice, telling him to stop being a dick, to just share his damn plan. Pete tried to quiet the voice by telling himself that secrecy was necessary. There was no sense in getting anyone's hopes up. Patrick, in his head, only laughed and called him a selfish prick.
I'll be back,
Pete repeated. In the meantime, read up on that shit. He pointed to the vial of sedative, which was still on the floor next to Patrick's left hand.
Find out how long we can keep him on it.
How? Andy asked.
Problem solve, Andrew, Pete snapped.
We can't just drug him forever, Joe broke in. Part of Pete was glad that Joe stopped the argument before it could escalate, but another part, the part that felt caged in and out of control, really wanted the opportunity to hurt someone with words or fists. It didn't matter. At least Pete was self-aware enough to realize that wasn't a good thing.
I don't need forever, Pete replied. Just long enough.
He turned then, taking a few steps toward the door before stopping in his tracks and forcing himself to turn back. There were so many things he wanted to say,
I don't come back, you should get the hell away from him. Don't blame yourself for this. He doesn't know what he's doing. Don't hold it against him. He didn't say any of that. Instead, he took a moment to memorize the slump of Patrick's shoulders, the awkward way his right arm was twisted beneath his body, the swelling of his ankle. Pete deserved to have that burned into his mind. As he left, one sentence replayed itself in his head. "This is all my fault."